This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, this is a great time to call us at 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, in addition to our callers, some interesting research always.
Yes, the brain and how it affects stress and how stress affects our body, especially in the stressful economy, and what that means for our health.
Okay, and?
And we're going to talk about cholesterol drugs and do they cause cancer. It's not necessarily an urban myth. It's really been a medical myth, but we'll talk about new information that's just been published in the New England Journal of Medicine.
Mm-hmm. And a yummy recipe?
Yes, summer vegetable corn chowder. What do you do when the veggies are so plentiful? The answer, make summer vegetable corn chowder. It is delicious.
That'll be coming up along with our medical myth buster here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. To the phones we go. A listener with us now, Zorba, in St. Louis, Missouri. Hello.
Hi.
How can we help?
I have a question about the use of products such as Icy Hot or Bengay.
Mm-hmm.
I have lower back problems and general muscle aches, especially when I work out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've recently decided to stop taking or drastically reduce the use of over-the-counter pain medications like Advil and Tylenol. And instead, I've been using or applying Icy Hot or Bengay when I go to sleep at night to my lower back. And I found myself doing this every day, and I started wondering if there are any adverse effects or anything harmful about using things like Icy Hot or Bengay on a daily basis.
Now, you went off the meds and onto the Icy Hot and Bengay. Is that working for you?
You know what? It does. It works. It kind of eases the pain for a while, and I fall asleep. But, you know, it doesn't have such a lasting effect. It works for a little while.
Yeah, what do the bedclothes smell like?
Oh, my husband once had to get up out of bed and leave and go to the next room because he couldn't take it anymore.
I mean, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I've gotten used to it that I kind of like it. But
it's very interesting. You kind of like it, but when you're around other people, they go, hey, what's going on here? And the other thing is I associate that often with older people because when older people come into the office, and I'm talking about in their 70s, 80s, and 90s, I can usually tell how bad their arthritis is based on what they smell like. And I don't mean they smell bad. They smell a Bengay. You know, it is the smell of the camphor and the eucalyptus. These are called counter-irritants. And it's very interesting. Counter-irritants, we don't know exactly how they work, but they work by sort of masquerading a sensation within our body. Our body is made to experience pain for a purpose. Mostly pain, the purpose of pain is saying, hey, don't do that. Don't put your hand on the stove. Don't lift that. Don't injure yourself with a hammer. So it has a purpose. Chronic pain has no purpose at all. Its purpose is to make our life miserable. And that's really defined as pain that exists after the healing has actually occurred. And pain has a memory. So we don't know why back pain just kind of continues. You know, we have an injury and it continues on and on and on. It doesn't usually happen with wrist pain or when we bang our thumb, but back pain is kind of a different thing. So what we want to do with Bengay and other things is masquerade the pain so we get the sensation of heat or cold, and what happens is the sensation of pain seems to disappear behind that curtain. And it's safe to use. You can use it forever. There's no evidence that it causes any problems in the long run, as long as you basically keep it away from kids who will often eat it. So that's one of the issues that have to do. Children will put that stuff in their mouth and eat it. And the other thing not to do is to tend to put it in the vaporizer. My mother would put that Vicks VapoRub, which has some similar products in the vaporizer, so the room would smell of it. And in fact, putting it in the vaporizer is not good for little babies and young children because it can cause problems. So the answer is, yes, you can use it. You don't become addicted to it. But as long as your husband can adjust to it and you kind of like the smell, it's okay.
Gosh.
Well, thanks so much for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Zorba, your mother wanted the house to smell like Vicks VapoRub.
Yes, she did. When we were all sick, she would put Vicks VapoRub. I still remember she would take a great big glob of it, like a tablespoonful, and put it in the vaporizer. There was a little shelf in the vaporizer, so when the hot steam, we had a hot air vaporizer, would come out, it would go over the Vicks, and the whole room would smell of Vicks VapoRub. Yeah, yeah. I associate that smell with Mom. It's a good smell in my brain, but yeah. It's not healthy.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hello.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I do have a question for you, Dr. Zorba. I am a 31-year-old mother of two, and in the late in my pregnancy with my second child, who is now 2.5, I started to have problems with my left hip, in that it would, during the night when I would get up, wake up during the night to switch positions, I would hear a very audible popping sound in my left hip. And not like your cracking your knuckles type of noise, but a real loud pop to the point it would wake my husband. I spoke to my doctor about it, who said that once he was born, my body got back to normal, things would kind of resolve and come back on their own. And to this day, with him being 2.5 years old, that has not happened yet.
So let's get back to the pop. So it woke your husband up. That's pretty loud.
It was quite loud.
By the way, is he a light sleeper or a heavy sleeper?
He's a heavy sleeper.
He's a heavy sleeper.
Yeah.
That's a loud pop. Oh, right. What was that? Was that associated with pain, by the way?
It was. I've normally been someone who's quite flexible. And it had a lot of mobility in my joints.
Okay.
But it did have kind of like a burning sensation.
Now,
to
when
it.
When you say flexible, are your fingers flexible? Do they flex back?
Yes,
more
I
than
am
others.
Double-jointed.
Oh, you're double-jointed. Okay,
yeah.
which is high flexibility. Yeah, that's just what I thought. Part of this, by the way, is related to that flexibility. When you go through pregnancy, one of the things that all the hormonal changes will do to the body is they make the ligaments more flexible. And this, of course, isn't to get you ready for the delivery when you want your pelvis to be as flexible as it can positionally and otherwise. From an evolutionary point of view, it makes sense. Flexibility allows you to take certain positions to try to be able to get the baby out. And the ligaments are also flexible within the pelvis itself. And usually, and when I say usually, there are exceptions when the hormones basically die down after the pregnancy, and that's what your doctor meant, that flexibility returns to normal. The issue is your normal is different than most normals because you are highly flexible. So they're different than most normals. Now, are you unstable when you're walking?
It does feel kind of loose. My mom has actually noticed I have a different gait than I used to.
Mm-hmm. You have more of a waddle?
Yeah, I guess you could put it that way.
Yeah, it's kind of more of a, sorry, I didn't mean to insult you with a waddle.
No, not at all.
We're just using medical terms, a
there
waddle gait. So just think of it as a medical term, not as an insulting term. My wife would be so upset that
I'll
said that.
I'll have to see if that's in my medical chart next time.
Physical therapy, have you gone there?
No, that was one of the suggestions. They did do a set of x-rays on it, and they did say that those came back normal.
Good. You need physical therapy. And
okay.
The reason is what you need to do is work with a good physical therapist and then ultimately with a trainer to rehabilitate the muscles. Ligaments are going to do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do much about them. You know,
okay.
Ligaments stretch and they don't stretch and you're hypermobile, which means your ligaments are loose. And so what you want to do is take the muscles around the skeleton and make them taut.
Okay.
And that's what you work on. And they have something called TheraBands. These are little isometric contraptions. They're basically big rubber bands, and you can use them anywhere. You can use them at home, and you do resistance against them. And by building up those muscles, what will happen is your joints will stay more in place. And that's really what you need to do.
Gotcha.
You may never go back to your previous normal because you're more lax in terms of your joints. But you can go back to a normal gait,
okay. And
you will be able to go back to where you're functioning in a totally normal way, but you'll still probably freak people out when you push your fingers back to your hands. You can relate to what I'm saying.
I can.
So thank you so much for your call.
Thank you so much, Doctor.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. We have callers waiting, but we do have a line open right now for you. Zorba, some interesting research on stress to talk about.
Yes. Now, this is interesting research from the rat literature.
Okay.
The rat literature.
Okay.
We're not rats. We're not rats. But we are under stress.
That's one step on the way. Yeah,
one step on the way. A pretty far step, but rats are good to study because they give us an idea of behavior. And rats aren't just creatures of habit. They also make executive decisions. So they may learn to run through a maze, and they memorize left, right, right, left, left, right. Yeah. They're very good at that. But they also make executive decisions.
Yeah, I've worked for some people who made executive decisions who were rats. No names.
You know what I'm talking about. That's right. You know what I'm talking about. But these rodents are even though they may be predisposed to do things over again, when there's food involved or other contraptions or things that they're looking at, like a rat of the opposite sex, they may make a change and not actually go through the maze the same way. Mm-hmm. And the real issue that they studied is they put the rats under stress. So what they did was they put them under stress with not having the same warmth in their cage, not having enough food in their cage, not having enough space in their cage. And what they discovered was when they increased the stress on the rats, they decreased the number of times they'd make an executive decisions, and the rats would become creatures of habit. So in other words, under stress, they tended to want to go through the maze over and over and over again the same way.
Kind of compulsive behavior.
Compulsive behavior, and not engage in a change in behavior that they would do when they weren't under stress. Like, oh, I don't have to go through the maze. I can go to the left and have a pellet, or I can go over here and see a rat of the opposite sex. Yeah. But they ignored those the more stress they were under. So looking at that and applying it to humans, as we're getting under stress, you know, we're creatures of habit, and we tend to then, well, I'm under stress, I'm going to have comfort food, right?
Right, yeah.
I'm going to go and have what I had before. I'm going to go and do something what I had before. And maybe this is from an evolutionary point of view, a very low-level functioning. We don't want to try something different, not because it may not be better, but because we're like the rats, we're going back to our old behavior.
And when we're stressed out, we may tend to get into addictive behavior.
Right. Yeah. Addictive, compulsive behavior, or habitual behavior. So maybe in this time of stress, we're clearly in a time of economic stress. I work in my office every day. Yeah. I see people losing their jobs. I had a guy the other day. He was out of work for 4 months. He's behind in child payments and so on. Maybe what we should do is think about what we're doing and say maybe doing the same thing over and over and over again isn't the right thing, and start to engage in
the
executive process.
And the good news from the study is when they got the rats out of that situation for a period of time,
they return back to their normal behavior.
So that really speaks for getting away from your stressful situation if you can and spend some time in a completely different environment.
Right. Now, if you can is a very interesting way to say it. You always can. You can always take yourself for some period of time within your life space and remove yourself in that situation. You can learn meditative techniques or yoga, and everyone's got 5 minutes a day or 15 minutes a day where they can engage in internal behavior so that they can get away from the compulsive behavior. There is no excuse for a lack of meditative activity when you're under stress, and that will help.
800-462-7413. Toll free. 800-462-7413. To Niagara Falls, New York now. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. What's up?
Well, I want to know. I have asthma. Mm-hmm. I've had asthma since I was 2 years old, and I'm 65. And I have a number of medications that I take, albuterol inhaler. I use Singulair. And I use Advair. Mm-hmm. And my question has to do with Advair. I want to know, what do you do when the normal dose of Advair isn't enough to keep the symptoms at bay?
Let's talk about the various drugs that you're on at this particular time. You're on Advair, which is a combination steroid and what we call a long-acting beta agonist, big fancy word. Mm-hmm. But it's similar to the rescue inhalers that people use when they use called albuterol. It's different in that it's long-acting, but it's in that same class. So with asthma, what we do is if you're using an inhaler more than twice a week, what we call a rescue inhaler, albuterol is a good example, then we put you on steroids. a steroid inhaler because they're safer. And if a steroid inhaler doesn't work, then we put you on Advair, which is a steroid inhaler plus this other drug that helps. And Advair comes in various amounts, and there's a maximal amount of steroid within it. That other component of the Advair stays the same throughout. So if you're not controlled on Singular on Advair, there are a couple things you have to do. First of all, you have to go back to your doc and say what's going on, because if the normal dose isn't working and you're on the highest dose, you may need to go on a small dose of oral prednisone. I mean, you're on Singular, which is another drug which helps, but you need to get an opinion from your asthma specialist, be it your family doc, pulmonologist, allergist, and figure out what else is going on, because you don't want to increase the dose of that drug. Once that drug's at the maximal dose, if you increase it, A, it doesn't work, and B, you're taking too much of that other component, and that other component puts you at risk. In other words, the other component, which is called the other component, which is similar to the rescue inhaler, if you take too much of it, it has been shown to increase the risk of heart attacks and high blood pressure and so on. Mm-hmm. So that particular part, you don't want to increase more than the standardized dose.
No, that doesn't sound like a good idea at all. And I do take the 550.
That's the highest
Advair.
Dose. That's right. That is the highest dose. Yeah. So you've got that. You're on Singular, and you still find that you're short of breath?
Yes, periodically I do, and it just kind of comes out of the blue.
Mm-hmm. Have you talked to your docs about it?
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I will tell you the truth, I have not been terribly well controlled since I left Green Bay, Wisconsin, which is my home. And I'm really looking at coming back.
Well, it's because you're not close to the Packers.
Yeah.
That's the problem. That's the problem.
That is the whole problem.
That's the problem.
And I don't get that good lung exercise by cheering at the top of my voice.
There you go. But you hit a really important point here. Are you on an exercise program?
I used to walk a lot.
I have to tell you, that will help your asthma. Within the extent that you can exercise with your asthma, if you develop cardiovascular fitness and you're on maximal dose of medication, that may give you the little extra cushion that you need to keep your asthma under control. So I would highly recommend, because that's going to happen before you move, I would highly recommend that you get yourself on a cardiovascular program.
Uh-huh. Well, that sounds like good advice to me. Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Before we break, Zorba, let's take a quick question from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. This one comes to us from Julie in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and it has to do with films. Julie writes, "Just in the past year, I've had trouble with getting nauseous while watching movies in the theater. I notice it particularly when I'm watching a movie with a lot of long, handheld camera shots. I really like to go to see films, and I hate the thought that I may have to take seasick pills prior to heading to the theater." Any ideas about what may be causing this?
Well, it's caused because visually, when you see movies with handheld cameras, they move around, and you get those visual cues, and some people just become nauseous. So my recommendation is Walt Disney. That's
oh,
all you can
on.
Go and see.
Oh, come on.
Bambi.
No, but really.
The great movies.
But really.
There's not much you can do. In terms of that, you're visually looking at it. It makes you nauseous and sick. Some people get nauseous on roller coasters. Some people get nauseous when they look down from tall buildings. You don't have to take a seasick pill. You can try Claritin before you go to a movie.
Oh,
you can do that. Won't make you sleepy. It may mm-hmm. work. If one doesn't work, I would try two of them. And frankly, if you want to go to the theater and see movies, you'll do it. This probably doesn't happen at home because the set is smaller in terms of your visual field. And so that's what you do. You can also try different places in the theater. In the back of the theater, it may not be as nauseous. In the back, in the corner of the theater, it may not be as nauseous because you don't get the full effect.
So you think it's the movie and not the $14 popcorn?
No, it's not. I don't think so.
If one of your favorite activities is making you nauseous, or if you have another lifestyle question, we want to hear from you. Just send your email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have lots more of your calls coming up. We have some interesting research, but our recipe is coming up first here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. We have a line open for you now at 1-800-462-7413. But before we're back to the phones, it's recipe time now, Zorba, and we're back to our vault again for another past favorite. Today's recipe is a great seasonal option and was extremely popular the first time we did it, way back in 1997. I think Adam had to convert the file from Word Perfect to...
to Word.
Yeah. So without further ado, here's our recipe from the vault, summer vegetable corn chowder.
Okay, summer vegetable corn chowder. The reason that we even developed this recipe is in the summer, there are lots of veggies.
Right.
And we like to use them different ways, you know.
Sure.
I mean, and they rot, frankly. And so the nice thing about the summer is you go out, you go to a farmer's market, you grow some of them, and you go, hey, I want to use these vegetables in a new way. And the summer vegetable corn chowder was really a popular recipe, and I would try it.
It's corn chowder just kind of makes your eyes light up anyway.
Exactly. As soon as sweet corn comes out, I just go, my eyes light up, and I'm happy. I'm a happy camper.
Yeah.
Okay, start out with two potatoes peeled and diced.
Two potatoes. Which kind of?
I don't think it matters. You know, I'll tell you, I tend to use red potatoes in this recipe because red potatoes are a little bit creamier.
Wouldn't you want to do more than two if it's red?
Yeah, then I would use more than two.
Yeah.
Then I'd probably use 4 or 6. You could use new potatoes. When you look at this, you sort of decide how many potatoes do I want to use and do I want to have them. So I'd probably peel them and dice them, but I take my reds and I'd probably, if I had new potatoes, I'd use little small potatoes too, but they're really good. Okay, now a quarter of a cup of leeks, thinly sliced. So one leek will do it.
Okay, a leek. A quarter cup, thinly sliced.
Yeah, that'll turn out to be one leek. Get rid of the green at the top part is what you're not going to use because that's going to be really too much fiber, too fibrous. Quarter of a cup of red onion sliced. So that's a small red onion.
Quarter cup of red onion diced?
That's right, diced. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, diced. A quarter cup of celery chopped.
A quarter cup of chopped celery.
That's right. So we've got sliced, diced, and chopped, and that's texture.
Okay.
Right? So you have different textures, which is what we like.
Yeah, that's good.
In a soup, we like different textures.
Right.
The texture is not boring then. A couple cloves of garlic, mince the garlic, put it through the press.
Two cloves of garlic minced.
A tablespoonful of margarine. You can use butter. In Wisconsin, we always say butter is better than margarine.
Yeah. A big tea butter.
That's right. Big tea butter. That's right. We'll go get the recipe. That's right. But either one will be fine. You could also use a tablespoonful of olive oil in this particular recipe, and that would add a nice flavor to it. 2 cups of low-sodium chicken broth.
2 cups low-sodium chicken broth.
That's right. Don't need the salt. 2 tablespoonfuls of cornstarch.
2 big tea cornstarch.
4 cups of skim milk.
4 cups of skim milk.
That's right. You don't think of chowder as milky.
Yeah.
2 16-ounce cans of corn or the equivalent taken off of fresh corn at a farmer's market.
Oh, of course. 2 16-ounce cans of corn or fresh corn.
That's right, fresh corn. Choose your corn carefully. I happen to use, when I use corn for this, I only use green giant Mexicorn. And the reason is there's less moisture within the can and the kernels are firmer.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried all different kinds. I do not use house brand corn for this because it's too milky. And it's not the – then there really is a difference in the kernels when you buy it in the can.
And you want your green giant stock.
I want my Green Giant stock to go up. Gosh, I don't even know who owns Green Giant. Was there really a Green Giant?
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Anyway, 1 cup of evaporated skim milk, if you can. You can get that at the market. It's right next to the regular evaporated milk, and you get a small can, which is a cup, or 2 small cans, which is a cup.
Evaporated skim milk.
That's right. 1/2 teaspoon of salt.
1/2 teaspoon salt.
1 teaspoon of hot pepper sauce, or as much as you want to taste.
Yeah, some hot pepper sauce.
1/4 cup of parsley.
1/4 cup of parsley.
And when you can get it, 1 tablespoonful of dill weed.
It's hard to
dry
get.
Is okay. Well, I like the fresh better. No, you can always add dry. Dry dill weed.
Okay, big tea of it.
Okay, let's make it. There's a lot of stuff in this recipe, but hey, when it's summer, there's a lot of stuff around when it's fall.
Mm-hmm.
In a large soup pot over medium heat, add the chicken broth, potatoes, leek, onion, and celery, and then add the margarine or olive oil if you choose and the garlic. Cover and simmer for 20 minutes, stirring continuously. So the whole thing is boiling. boiled. Then in a saucepan, dissolve the cornstarch in cold skim milk. It's got to be cold skim milk. Whisk over medium heat until it's thickened, and then whisk that into the soup pot. You know, it doesn't clump up. It's very important. Mm-hmm. Add the corn, then add the evaporated skim milk, salt and pepper to taste, and simmer for 15 minutes. Be careful with the salt. I usually add salt at the end, so it'll be as much as we want to have. Mm-hmm. And in our house, different people like differing amounts of salt, so you have to go to the lowest one that wants it. And then stir occasionally to thicken the chowder. Don't allow it to boil, because if you allow it to boil, the cornstarch will clump. Mm-hmm. And then serve in nice warm bowls, top with the parsley, top with the fresh dill weed if you have it. Mm-hmm. You put it on top of it, and bon appetit. Yeah. It really is a great recipe.
Now, a quick question about the low-sodium chicken broth. Mm-hmm. We have 2 cups of it. I know that just 2 cups of low-sodium chicken broth by itself is inedible. Is it okay?
I mean, you can use regular chicken broth, and that's your salt. The salt then comes from the chicken broth. The answer is yes. You could get. So you don't like low sodium chicken broth?
No, I can't. Can you eat low sodium?
Yeah. How about regular chicken broth?
Yeah, I mean, it's not great, but when you have to have it, it's all right.
When do you have to have regular chicken broth?
When you're on some kind of medical thing.
You can use regular chicken broth in the recipe, but that's your salt. That's the salt in the recipe, and that's the only reason that we use low-sodium chicken broth. 240 calories, I could tell the chicken broth you associate with sickness and illness.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's used in cooking. Anyway, low calories, low fat, great recipe, try it.
Again, if there's a recipe you remember but can't find, or there's one you feel deserves an encore performance, let us know what it is, and it might end up being our next recipe from the vault.
Just
send the name of the recipe and an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor On Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. A listener with us now, Zorba, in Sugar Grove, Illinois. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help you?
Well, I have a question today about juicers. I recently turned 50, and I started juicing, and I've been using a great machine that does the vegetables and the fruits really well, but I recently saw an infomercial for a new juicer, the Health Master, that keeps all of the rind and the pulp as part of the juice. My juicer doesn't do that, and I wanted to know the benefits, if there were any, to using the rind and the pulp as part of my juicing process.
Really an interesting question. Before Zorba handles that, I'm interested. You turned 50 and got a juicer. Was there some relationship between turning 50 and getting a juicer? You figured it's about time in life to, you know, stop eating the vegetables or the fruits and juicing them all up.
I wanted to make sure that I was eating more vegetables and fruit, and I thought this would be the easiest way to do it. And I have to tell you, I love it, and I feel like I have more energy, and I look forward to creating new recipes and to finding recipes online for juice drinks I can make.
Well, you do both fruits and vegetables.
Yes, I do.
What's an example of one of the new recipes?
My favorite is beets and carrots with a little bit of ginger, fresh ginger, or beets and apples, which is quite good. I've done some with spinach and celery and carrots, and that's been great.
Beets and carrots is your favorite? You're kidding, right?
Beets.
You love the beets.
Now, wait a second. I happen to love beets. Whenever I eat beets, I think of my grandfather. My grandfather was Polish. My grandmother.
So mine.
See, that's it. It's in the blood. It's in the blood. What are Poles like? Beets and blood sausage. See, it's in the blood.
No to the blood sausage.
No to the blood sausage.
Yes to the beets.
But it's funny because as you were saying beets and carrots, I looked in the studio and I looked at Adam and his face was just going, oh, I can't imagine pasta recipe like that. But let's look at juice and juicing. Juicing has been around ever since electricity was invented, and obviously before that. But juicers are kind of amazing things. You know, they're big, large contraptions because they've got to spin the stuff out. What do you do with all of the leftovers that are going, you know, all the cellulose that essentially is done?
This is the guilty part, which is why I'm interested in this other juicer. I don't have a garden, so I don't use it that way. But then somebody told me you can use the pulp and the rind to make soup stock. I haven't tried that yet, though.
So one of the issues with juicing is what do you get out of it, and is it really a concentrated form of a healthy drink? The reality is you do get most of the vitamins, you do get most of the minerals, you do get rid of the cellulose, but that fiber, the fiber from the cellulose, is good for you. On the other hand, if you drank the juice and you tried to eat those many vegetables, you'd never do it because the fiber. So my recommendation is keep on juicing. Juicing is great, great stuff.
What about the juicer that she's thinking of getting?
Well, the answer in terms of the fiber is you have to get some fiber in your diet. So you don't want to just depend on juices. You can either get fiber separately. I don't think I'd spend the money on another juicer. How much did the juicer cost that you have right now?
Less than $100.
That is cheap.
And it's very, very good.
That is cheap. And how much was the juicer on the infomercial?
It was almost $200.
Right. But so it, you know,
but it does everything but clean your house.
If
it's
it
really
does.
Amazing.
Well, it's your choice. You can either get the fiber by leaving some of the pulp back, and that essentially is for people who don't juice, having orange juice with pulp. In other words, it's got some fiber in there. But frankly, I think I'd save your money, stick with the juicer, and simply get fiber somewhere else, either from a fiber-filled cereal that you have in the morning or simply from some veggies that you eat with fiber. But keep on juicing. It's a great way to stay on a good, healthy diet. Take care, and it's a great
thing
to do when you're 50. Great thing to do when you're 50.
Have a good day.
Thanks.
You too. Thank you very much. You have to wait till you're 50?
Great thing to do on your birthday.
Time now, Zorba, for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Not too long ago, we were chatting about sunscreen and expiration dates. Well, Carrie from Green Bay, Wisconsin, along with many other listeners, was shocked by your answer.
Shocked.
Carrie says, a listener asked about the protection offered in sunscreen and whether or not it expired. Zorba said that it did not. Having just attended an information session on children and sun protection, I knew this was inaccurate. Upon checking our bottles at home, it was confirmed. Baby, child sunscreens expire after 1 year, and adult bottles after 2 years. The expiration date can be found on the bottom of spray cans and at the top seal of tubes. I hope to hear a correction.
Well, actually, I have to tell you a few things about expiration dates. Let's look at the drug aspirin. Aspirin, like all drugs that are over-the-counter, has an expiration date. It's been proven that aspirin in a sealed bottle lasts for 50 to 100 years. In other words, the expiration date has to be there. By law, things that contain certain drugs and chemicals have to have an expiration date. Now, the issue is, does the expiration date actually mirror what is going on in the bottle? And so when I made that statement, it really had to do not with the expiration on the bottle, because they do have expiration dates, but whether or not the chemical actually deteriorates and expires. Mm-hmm. And for that, I will find more information and bring it back. Because even though it has an expiration date, it doesn't mean it actually expires. Another perfect example are cans. You can get cans of vegetables, and they now have an expiration date, but it's been shown that vegetables can actually, in a can, last for 50 to 100 years. They don't actually expire because they are sterile within the can.
Mm-hmm.
So the expiration date is really a, if you will, a point of view of what is recommended by the FDA and may not mirror what's going on in the bottle. I'll get back on this.
Yeah.
I promise.
I know this is something that's important to you because you all the time talk about the dangers of too much sun, and especially when you're a kid getting too much sun without proper protection. So we'll look forward to hearing
about
that.
You know, the other interesting thing was they said we went to a seminar and therefore this is true. And it's just like the web. You go to a seminar, expert stands up, or on a web, expert puts it out. Is it true? Well, maybe it's true, maybe it's not true. But I promise this will go on.
Well, that wraps up this edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Send in your rebuttal for our next edition in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Now, we have lots more of your questions coming up. We have some really interesting research. Don't forget our medical myth buster later in the hour here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number again is 1-800-462-7413. And we'll catch our next call after some interesting information. Zorba, many are concerned about the possible cancer-causing effects of cholesterol-lowering drugs. You have some new information on this worry.
Right. And this has been a worry that popped up because of Vytorin. Vytorin is a cholesterol-lowering drug that has two components to it. Mm-hmm. One is Zocor, simvastatin, which is a very commonly used statin drug. And the other one is called Astimbi, which is a second drug, which changes the absorption of cholesterol within the bloodstream. Drug became very, very popular. It was a couple of $1 billion a year because of lowered cholesterol. And then what happened was they discovered that the drug did not appear to, although it lowered cholesterol, did not appear to be as effective as it was in terms of reducing perhaps the thickness of the carotid artery. Well, lo and behold, and that's a marker for heart attacks, lo and behold, they looked at other data, and the Vytorin data seemed to show there was more cancer in their group than the plain statin data from the Zocor data.
Yeah. Is that even on the market anymore?
Oh, yes, it is on the market.
You don't see those awful commercials that they used to
have. The commercials are not there. The drug is still a very popular drug, and the data is out as to whether or not it's as effective or not because of numbers. The numbers of people that discover these things sometimes are huge. Well, lo and behold, the number of people in the Vytorin group appear to have more cancer than the control group. Mm-hmm. The New England Journal of Medicine just recently published an article looking at the data, and they had a number of experts looking at the data overall, and they've now concluded that there does not appear to be a cancer risk associated with any cholesterol-lowering drug. Vytorin, Lipitor, Zocor, it doesn't appear to be that way statistically. But that they can't answer the question 100% for sure because you would need 20,000 people to be able to answer the question followed for 5 years, basically. That's what you would need. So all you can do is look at the markers and say it is unlikely that this drug will cause cancer, but we're not 100% sure, and that's as good as it gets. So how do you deal with it as a patient?
Well, I'm sorry, I don't understand this. How can you have a drug that you're saying this might cause cancer and then some months later say it appears that it doesn't?
Well, because the initial analysis of the data seemed to show that it did, but when you then looked at other studies that used the same drug and you incorporated that data into the analysis, it showed that it didn't. And so that's what it was. They incorporated other data. The real data will come out over the next few years looking at that, but it's a big problem with all these drugs. Right now, I think it is very safe to say that all cholesterol-lowering drugs, including Vytorin, do not appear to cause cancer, and they're useful, and you should not stop taking them.
1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Here's a listener with us now, Zorba, in Jacksonville, Florida. Hello.
How are you? Glad to be here.
Oh, good to have you. How can we help?
I have a question about dark circles, not only under but above my eyes. The conventional wisdom here in Florida is that everything's so swampy and wet and damp all the time, that it's allergies and that something's blooming all the time. And I read in a magazine recently that said that in order to do away with that, you can take a Claritin every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems kind of excessive, to take a drug every day for the rest of your life until you move from the state. So I just wondered, especially the dark circles above my eyes are actually worse than the dark circles below my eyes.
Now, have you been in Jacksonville all your life?
For the last 22 years, and prior to that in the Midwest.
Uh-huh. And have you had those dark circles for all those 22 years?
I've had them for several years, but I don't recall having them all my life.
Well, first of all, you don't usually have them your whole life, because as kids, they don't have dark circles. Dark circles under the eyes are due to a number of
this
things.
This is above, too.
Yeah, above and underneath the eyes. But it has to do a lot with genetics. In other words, how thin your skin is, how thick your skin is, what the vascular system underneath your skin is. And when we look at eyes, we associate dark circles under the eyes with fatigue, a lack of vitality. You know, we visually look at it, certainly in our society and other societies, as something that we don't want to have. Inevitably, if you've got a dark spot on the corner of your face, you know, under your chin, nobody really notices and pays attention. But that same spot under the eye, connotes something. And it's common all over. It's common in the north and the south and the east and west. It's not any more common in Jacksonville than anywhere else. Now, when you take an antihistamine, does that make a difference?
It seems to make a small difference, yes.
There is nothing wrong with taking Claritin every single day. It's okay. It's safe. A lot of people do it. They do it for allergies. And when they're in Florida, because there are lots of allergies, there are lots of pollens, it is a swampy area. There are more antihistamines sold in Florida than there are in Wisconsin, because in the winter people just don't take them nearly as much. So that's safe if it works. If it doesn't work, there's no real cure for it other than a cosmetic cure of what you wear in terms of cosmetics for that. How much sleep do you get at night?
Usually about 8 hours.
Okay, so sleep, you're okay. How much coffee do you drink?
None. Well, no. It's not a daily habit.
Okay, not a daily habit. And how much alcohol do you drink?
Usually like one glass of wine 3 or 4 times a week.
Okay, because the things that can increase the circulation and sort of open up the circulation in the face can be alcohol. Do it. Some people, coffee actually can make a difference. Try 1 Claritin. If that doesn't work, I would double the dose to 2 Claritin, very safe. If that doesn't work, I would try over-the-counter Zyrtec, because that may be more effective. Zyrtec makes some people sleepy, others it does not. But I would try either a double dose Claritin or Zyrtec and see if it works better.
The Claritin generic is on, like, almost free. The
Claritin generic is very cheap. And the Zyrtec generic is also coming down. Yeah. But, yeah, the Claritin generic, I went to a discount store, and they were 150 pills for
$10. Yeah.
I mean, that's as cheap as you get. So if you're going to get Claritin over-the-counter, go to a discount shop.
That sounds great. I appreciate your help.
Yeah, thanks for the call. I've been taking Claritin twice a day now for a while, and once a day forever.
Yeah, and it really works very well. I have a question for you. I think discount store must be an old-fashioned term, isn't it?
Oh, you mean, they don't say discount store?
I don't think anyone calls it a discount store. They say Walmart. They don't say discount store. They say Walmart, or they say Target, or they say Kmart if it's still around. They don't say a discount store. I think I'm stuck back in the 60s. Heavens to Betsy. Heavens to Betsy.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Time once again now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. Today's myth deals with our eyes. People have tried everything from eating carrots to eye exercises to help their eyesight. I know we talk a lot on this show about the benefits of exercise, but can eye exercises enhance our vision?
No, they can't actually enhance our vision. Now, I did some research on this years ago because I was interested, and there were a couple of optometrists who developed a program whereby they said they could actually teach people to move their eyes left and right, concentrate on some things and do that, but the reality is it doesn't work. As we get older, our eyeball changes its elasticity. The lens within our eye changes the elasticity, and although we tend to sag in some places, we tend to be a little more taut in other places. And the eye is one of those places where we tend to be a little more taut. And you can do it slightly. You know, when you were first losing, well, I mean, I used to have perfect vision. And when I first started losing my vision to be able to read, I could just strain a little bit and see it. Well, yeah. When you're straining a little bit, what you're doing is you're pulling down your lens within your eye, which is a little bit elastic. But as you get older, it really doesn't work, doesn't change the eyeball. So it's a myth that you can exercise away your glasses. So if you need glasses, you're going to have to wear them.
If you've been eyeing a myth you'd like Zorba to bust, send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
What's that phone? Oh, yes, 800-462-7413. Question for Zorba, that's the number to call, 800-462-7413. Zorba, let's welcome a listener now in Ottawa, Kansas. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I went in for my annual checkup, and they did a sonogram on my kidneys and liver, and I got a phone call a couple of days later, and they said, hey, you've got a cyst on your liver and a cyst on your kidneys, but it's okay. We're just going to monitor it. Everything's fine. Is that something to be alarmed about, or what's the deal with that?
Well, let me tell you something interesting about CAT scans and cysts on livers and kidneys. First of all, we never knew as many cysts existed until we ended up doing CAT scans. And it turns out they're very, very common. Kidney cysts are common, but there are kidney cysts that are good and kidney cysts that are bad. And the radiologist looks at the CAT scan, looks at that kidney cyst and says, this is something we follow because 98% of them are good and 2% of them are bad. So we repeat it again in 6 months. If it's a complex cyst, that's what they call it, then they'll say, we've got to repeat it right now or it needs to have a biopsy. So, and they're very, very good at doing this, and they've got a very good hit rate of knowing what's important and what's not. So following up is important, but it's probably benign. Same thing for the liver. Some of them are benign, meaning they're not cancer. Some are not. So I think you could depend on that. Do you trust your doctor? Do you have a good doctor?
Yeah, oh, yeah, he's very thorough.
Your doctor is thorough. Your doctor, as long as the radiologist says that, yes, you can actually depend on it. So that's good. So, and as a trucker, do you take care of your health?
Yeah. I'm in great health. I take few medications for hypertension, they call it, but it's under control.
You know, I have to tell you, there are a lot of people think that truckers do not take care of their health, and I've discovered there are two types of truckers, just like two types of people in the world, those who take care of their health and those who do not, and truckers who take care of their health listen to public radio.
I try real hard, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. And remember, it's very important for all of us on the road, never text while you're driving. I'm sure you don't do it, but a recent study showed that if you text, it increases dramatically the risk of having an accident. So I'm on this anti-texting vendetta, if you will.
So. Good one. Thanks a lot for calling from the road. We appreciate it. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Before we step away for the week, Zorba, let's go to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and see if we can help out a listener named Steve who has a stump the doc question for you.
Okay, stump the doc.
Steve seems to have stumbled on a new cure-all elixir.
Okay.
He writes, for the last 20 years, I have been putting Tabasco sauce in my coffee and teas.
Wait a second. Tabasco sauce in his coffee and teas?
I'm just reading what it
Are
says
Are you reading
here.
That correctly?
Just
Tabasco
what it says
sauce
here.
In his coffee and teas.
That's what
okay.
it says. Mm-hmm. About 3 to 6 drops.
Okay.
I learned about it from an elderly man that said it was like Roto-Rooter and cleans you out. Watch out for those elderly men. I have asthma, he says, and after 2 cups of coffee or tea in the morning, I can breathe clearly.
I have
been a smoker for 47 years, both legal and illegal. And the last doctor I saw told me I had the lung capacity of a 38-year-old that no longer smoked. Steve goes on to say that he has no symptoms of arthritis, even though it runs in his family, and that he doesn't feel small cuts. He wants to know why this is. What is it about that Tabasco
sauce? It's all from the Tabasco. If we just started putting Tabasco sauce in everything we had, we would get rid of all disease in America. And in fact, I am going to start labeling it Zorba's Hot Sauce, the cure-all for everything. Well, first of all, let's talk about the smoker in the lungs. That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
A doctor cannot look at you and say you've got the lungs of a 38-year-old. First of all, it's bogus. Chances are if he smoked for 47 years, he doesn't have the lungs of a 38-year-old. I don't believe it.
You can't tell from the X-ray.
100% the X-ray, isn't it? It's pulmonary function test. You breathe into a machine and it tells you how much oxygen diffuses. And after you smoke for 47 years, you've smoked for 47 years.
Yeah.
Come on.
Okay.
I mean, let's understand that. You destroy your lungs. And tobacco isn't going to make it better. Or Tabasco, rather, isn't going to make it better.
Right.
Now, he feels better by putting Tabasco in his coffee and other things. He feels like he can breathe better and it makes him feel good. Okay, use that. There are things that we take in the morning to sort of get us up in the morning. I love 2 cups of a really dark roast coffee, and afterwards I feel like I can see the world. Do I need it? Nah, I don't really need it. But it's part of my habit, and it makes me work. And so I think this is okay if it's something you like to do. But there is nothing in Tabasco that I can imagine that is going to cure his arthritis, keep his cuts from actually closing up sooner, or make his cuts close up sooner, and take care of his lungs to make sure that he doesn't get chronic bronchitis or emphysema. I think it's all hogwash.
So it's all in Steve's head, you're
That's
saying.
That's right.
If you know of another hot sauce that could be the fountain of youth, or if you think you can stump Public Radio's favorite family doc, send your questions in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week.
Take care, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us day or night at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Millie Vanilli, otherwise known as Brad Colbert, and Adam Friedrich are on the other side of the glass pretending to produce the show. Our executive producer is that same Adam Friedrich, and our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
National support for Zorba Pastor on Your Health comes from the AED Superstore, helping people save lives with Philips HeartStart automated external defibrillators for business, school, travel, and home. Available at AEDSuperstore.com. Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0829Z.
PRI, Public Radio International.